الحمد لله رب العالمين، الحمد لله الذي لا يبلغ مدحته القائلون ولا يحصي نعماءه العادون ولا يؤدي حقه المجتحدون، الذي لا يدركه بعد الحمم ولا يناله موسى الفطن. ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، العبد المعيد الرسول المسدد المصطفى العمجد محمود الأحمد سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، لا سيما بقية الله في العرضين، صاحب العصر والزمان، خليفة الرحمن، إمام الإنس والجان، ولعن الله أعداهم أجمعين إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله وقوله الحق. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ونريد أن نمن الذين استضعفوا في الأرض ونجعلهم أئمة ونجعلهم الوارثين، صدق الله العلي العظيم. صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. First of all, we thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for this ongoing commemoration, this ongoing tribute to Aba Abdullah. These are the days where it seems like every single year that we commemorate Imam Hussein, it becomes more and more relevant in this day and age. There used to come a time where this was an annual tradition. It was something that we did every single year. But given the situation of the world today, given what's happening around us, the fitna, the facade, the increasing of Yazidiyat all over the world, this commemoration now becomes relevant. It becomes a little bit about today. And no longer do we look at this as an annual commemoration, but rather a preparation for us to fight the Yazid of today. It is always an honor for me to be here with all of you. I consider now this to be another one of my homes in the U.S. The barakat of traveling and being the mu'mineen is that you develop different homes all across the country, alhamdulillah. And this now has become my homes. And so long as there's palm trees in Los Angeles, you can rest assured that I'll be here, inshallah. I'm with you, like was announced, for 5 days. We do have a topic in mind, as usual, and we'll get to that in a moment. Before that, though, I really want all of you to understand the importance of this commemoration. You see, we, and I know that I'm preaching to the choir here, but we sometimes believe this commemoration to be a historical one, where we believe that this was a tribute to a man on the 61st of Hijjah on the plains of Karbala, and it is no doubt what Aba Abdullah Hussein did. No one else did. However, if we keep it to that, then of course we've done a huge injustice to Imam Hussein. We live in a time of confusion, we live in a time of fitna and facade, we live in a time where our youth don't know what to believe in. We live in a time where the Deen of Islam has become very inclusive, where either you are with me or I behead you. We live in a time where the black flag and the term La ilaha illallah has become a sign of violence. We live in a time where the takbir, the most beautiful statement in Islam, Allahu Akbar, is usually preceded or proceeded by some act of violence. And this, if of course, was part of the master plan, where wherever you saw a black flag and wherever you saw the term Allahu Akbar, you could rest assured that some blood somewhere was being shed. And this is where we live. And right now our youth are either confused, either they're silent, or they're indifferent, God forbid. And so this is the platform, this is the arena where we need to kind of understand that, yes, we do have a connection to that historic Karbala, but more importantly, we have a responsibility to today's Ashura and today's Karbala as well. As one of my ustadis always say in the house, that the moment that Yazidiyat has entered the arena, know that Karbala has started. We believe that Aba Abdullah al-Hussein, or maybe we don't, destroyed Yazidiyat. He didn't destroy Yazidiyat at all. What he did do was he gave us the tools to face Yazidiyat. He told us what to do when we face Yazidiyat. He told us that everything is fair game. You sacrifice everything for the reality of exposing the Yazid of the time. Today, there is no shortage of dhulm, unfortunately, no shortage of Yazidiyat, unfortunately. The problem that we see is that Yazidiyat and the Yazids of the time are growing, and the Husseins of the time are not growing fast enough. And this is the platform. This is really where we need to build up this passion. The amount of love that we have for Imam Hussein is unheard of. The first 10 days, if you look at how much effort, how much work, how much money is poured into this system of Azadari, we have this special place in our heart for Imam Hussein. Like the Prophet said, as long as there's a mu'min alive, his heart will forever burn for Abu Abdullah, no doubt about it. We go running towards the masajid, thank you very much. We go running towards the masajid when it comes to Imam Hussein, because the sheer option of staying home is just not an option for us. But the problem is that it's not enough for us to simply commemorate the man. We have to understand that there's a lot more to it. And this comes to our topic today. We are in the days of our fourth Imam, Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wassalam. And if we examine this, his khutbah in the courtyard of Yazid, you know that he had introduced the Ahlul Bayt using six qualities. And we also know that the Ahlul Bayt, of course, aren't limited to six qualities. When our sixth Imam says, Nahnu Asma al-Husna, we are the Asma al-Husna. The Asma al-Husna are unlimited. The qualities of the Ahlul Bayt are also unlimited. And yet, when Imam Sajjad had the opportunity to speak to this courtyard and introduce, perhaps for the first time, who the Ahlul Bayt were, he chose six qualities, very, very unique in those qualities. I'm only here for 5 days. If I was here for an entire ashra, I can break down each quality for you. However, we will choose one quality of the six and work on that for the next 4 nights after tonight to ensure that we understand what's going on. What were those six qualities? He says, ilm and hilm. Us, the Ahlul Bayt, were known as six qualities. We're known by six qualities. One is ilm, our knowledge. Ilm is a whole different discussion altogether. Hilm is forbearance. Shuja'at is one, balaghat is one, muhabbat fi qulub mu'min is one. And finally, this idea of ata'at is also one as well. Today, for the sake of our next 5 lectures, we'll look at the idea of developing Islamic courage in this era of fitna and fasad. When he uses shuja'at as one of the qualities, what does it mean to be a shaji in Islam? What does it mean to have courage in Islam? Because the misconception is that the more bodies that you slain, the more courageous you are. The more physically strong you are, the more courageous that you are. The more enemies you destroy, the more courageous you are. When we think about courage, we think about physical brute strength. We think about a man who is a very large man, who the enemies fear, and that to us is a man who is brave and courageous. Islam, however, redefines what courage is. If we look at the warriors of Karbala, we understand that courage has nothing to do with brute strength. Shuja'at in Islam, and we'll expand that across 4 nights, has everything to do with doing what the zamana and the era is asking you to do. To be courageous in Islam is to be able to do what the deen needs you to do, even if that goes against what you want to do. The example I'll give you is very simple. If we look at, let's say, the era of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salatu wa salam. During the time of the Holy Prophet, when he was alive, Ibn al-Mu'mineen took place or took part in every single war but one, they say, the War of Tabuk. And he never pulled out a Zulfiqar after the death of the Holy Prophet until it was his own Khilafat, where he had three civil wars. In the era of 23 years, the quote-unquote silence of Ibn al-Mu'mineen that we like to call, the Zulfiqar never came out once. As much as Ali did in the wars during the Prophet's time, I mean, he killed 70 kuffar in one battle by himself. The stories of Khandaq and Khaybar are in front of us. What he did in Siffin, what he did in Nahrawan, in Jamal are in front of us. And yet the ulama can say, and one can say, the most courageous time for Imam Ali had nothing to do with the battlefield. It was those 23 years where he did what the deen asked him to do, even though it was his own God-given right. And his silence, his choice to not pull the Zulfiqar out, was the most courageous time of Amir al-Mu'mineen. We have, of course, Amr ibn Abdawud in Khandaq, we have the daughter of Khaybar, we have Badr and Uhud, of course. We have all these things, we have Ghadir in front of us, we have Kullu Iman, we have all these things in front of us. There's no shortage of the fazilat of Amir al-Mu'mineen, but when the deen asked such a man to put the Zulfiqar back and not pull it out for the sake of the deen, that takes courage. Right now, a lot of our youth, when it comes to the deen of Islam, are asked to do certain things and not do certain things. Right now, we as elders are asked to follow the leadership right now. Follow the marjiat. This whole ISIS business, this whole business, what's going on in the world right now, you know, we just want to react a certain way. When it comes to azadari, we want to react a certain way. And whatever we think is best for us. Islam says, look, it doesn't matter what you think. The deen of Islam needs something from you. And the courageous individual is that individual who puts his own khaishat and desires aside and looks at what the deen wants. And you think that's easy, it's not. It's not easy. And if we are to derive lessons from the event of Karbala, one lesson is courage. One lesson is this idea that Abu Fazl al-Abbas was a giant of a man, a warrior. He was chosen by Amir al-Mu'mineen for the day of Ashura. 33 years old, some say 35 years old, in the prime of his life, the day of Ashura, his mawla that he lived and breathed for is dying of thirst in front of him. His sakina that's near and dear to him is crying, Ala Atash, Ala Atash. He knows that if he was given 1 second of ijazah permission, this war would be over. And in that level of javani and youth, where your passion and your emotion is alive and your rage is there for the enemy, for you to put all of that aside and be denied war and not complain and simply submit to the deen of Islam takes courage. It's not easy. It's not easy. When you know that, look, if I it was up to me, I would take things in my hands, everything would be over. My mola would have water, my sakina would have water, my Ali Askar would have water. But Imam Hussein tells Abbas that, Abbas, we're not here for that. If I let you go, I'll let you go and get some water. This is what's needed today. It's for us to not look at what we want and react and simply be individuals who are like animals, we're instinctive. No, Allah made us aqil, human beings. The development of courage is very, very important. In this day and age, when we are constantly hearing about Shias being killed all over the world, Muslims being killed all over the world, from a group that we've never seen before. The sheer disregard for humanity is there in front of us. And then when you have individuals on the member on the pulpit who try to make this into a Sunni Shia issue, that's what boils our blood a little bit. We know enough about our Sunni brothers to know that even they don't understand this ideology. So developing Islamic courage in this day and age, to fight the fitna and fasad in this day and age. You know, Abu Sufyan approaches Amir al-Mu'mineen and says, look, Ali, this khilafat is not theirs, it's yours. You say the word and I'll have my army come and get your khilafat back. And this was when, Abu Sufyan was a smart man. He came at a time where everything was emotionally running in the veins of Amir al-Mu'mineen. You pick up Khutbah Sheikh Shakir, my youth out there, I ask you two things. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
I know it's only a 3-hour difference, but for some reason I'm a little bit low on my battery right now. I need to be plugged in a little bit. So just bear with me today, inshallah, and from tomorrow we'll be back to our loud and annoying self, inshallah, from tomorrow. But today, just bear with me, inshallah. I just want to get through the speech. I'm a little bit droggy and drained a little bit. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Two things to my youth, my advice to all of you. Number one is read history. Read history. History teaches us a lot. You'll know one thing from history, and I'll get back to it in the morning in a second. You'll know one thing from history, and this is really where I want my youth to understand, and my elders, of course, as well. I'm here to speak to the youth. If the elders gain something from this haqeen and faqeer, then so be it. But my youth, I am with you guys the next 5 nights. We don't read enough. We don't have the culture of reading. You know, we look at some, you know, if there's a movie out there or a YouTube video out there, I can watch that, but don't ask me to read a couple of pages of a book. You look at the history of Shiism, you look at the prosecution of Shiism. You see, look, if a person comes to you and presents an ideology, and I really want you guys to understand this, what's happening today in the world right now, because what's happening today in the world is I'm traveling enough to understand our youth are actually starting to doubt the religion, starting to doubt the school of thought of Shiism. And this whole Islam thing, and they're running away from it, and they're losing their identity, and they're becoming apologetic Muslims, especially here in the West. Now is not the time to apologize, right? Now is the time, if anything, to kind of separate ourselves from other factions of Islam, to say we are the true believers. You look at the history of Shiism, from the moment that door of Fatima was burned until today. And I've said this here before, they have destroyed our imams. These are imams who are peace-loving individuals, who would not take a risk out of the mouth of an ant, who would feed the poor, who would sit there and tell a blind man, not even his name, and sit there with him and converse with him at night. And when the old man would ask Imam Ali, what is your name? He goes, look, don't worry about my name, just know that you are a faqir and I am a faqir as well. When was this? When Ali was the Imam, the Khalifa al-Waqt. It wasn't until after he passed away that for 3 days he cried to Imam Hassan saying, I haven't seen my friend in 3 days. And then he realized that it was my Mawla who would sit with me when no one else would. This was the kind of individuals that we have. They were poisoned, they were slaughtered, they were trampled, they were imprisoned, they were separated. After that, their children were treated the way they were treated. Our ulama were killed. Our libraries were burnt. Our books were set on fire. Our hawza ilmiyah were set on fire. Our women were made widows. Our kids were made orphans. Our countries were invaded. The best of the best, the cream of the crop, were targeted and still are. One by one by one, to the point that they have to flee their own country and set up shop somewhere like here. If all of that is for a group in Islam that's off the path, right? They say Shiism isn't even a proper ideology. It is a political thought. It's a bunch of, you know, hoodlums that are going against the Khilafah, as they say. Right? Just a couple of guys who didn't accept the first Khalifa, second Khalifa. So they're causing a little bit of a stir. When that happens, when someone causes a stir like that, the very first basic reaction you do with them is you leave them alone. I really want you to understand this point. If I'm able to deliver it, then fantastic. The first thing that you would do with such an annoying group, if you find them to be annoying, is leave them alone. Ignore them. If you believe them to be jahil, off the path, there's no deen in them whatsoever, they're kafir, as you say, they're off the path, they're gumrah, there's no hidayat, the last thing you would do is give them any of your attention. If you ignore them, they'll fade away, they'll go away. The more you give them attention, the more they'll have their movement. But the sheer fact that we have been targeted from day number one, killed the way we've been killed, targeted, pinpointed, isolated, secluded, labeled, it's not this idea that we are off the path. It actually adds validity to our path. Because then if you don't ignore them, what do? You have no choice but to face them head on. And they know there is no ideology out there like the Ahlul Bayt. So there's no intellectual battle here, of course not. You sit down with us, let's talk about it, let's debate. You try to debate a non-Shia in Islam, eventually his imam or his alim in the mosque will say, look, your best reaction is to stay away from your Shia friends. Don't talk to your Shia friends about Islam. They'll confuse you. No, we're not here to confuse you. The sheer fact that billions of dollars is being poured into the destruction of our ideology, the sheer fact that there have been hundreds of lives sacrificed for our own destruction, the sheer idea that we are on the agenda of many of the top governments in this world, is not the fact that we are off the path. It means that we are right on the path. If we were not on the path, they wouldn't even spend $1 on us. These guys are a bunch of hoodlums. Let them be. Eventually they'll fade away. Because they know that if they want to destroy our ideology, there are two ways. Either present an ideology that's better than ours, and we'll submit to it. Or destroy us. Shed our blood. Amongst all this chaos today, right now, all the bloodshed, it breaks our heart when one of our Shia brothers are killed. In Iraq, in Palestine, and there are Shias in Palestine, by the way. Many, many Shias are in Palestine, by the way. There are Pakistanis, there are Bahrainis, there are Iraqis, Afghanis, all of these. Every single time, doesn't matter where they're from, our heart breaks. But we know that within that chaos is our victory. Because sometimes it's not the way you live. It's not the way you live that measures your victory. It's the way you die that measures victory. A lot of our youth ask us, look, Imam Hussein lost the war. Say that, said with all due respect. Why do we claim that he won the war? And the same question was asked to Bibi Zainab, salamu ala alayha. Then why is it that you celebrate this idea? Why do you claim it to be beauty on the day of Ashura? And she says that Imam Hussein gave everything on the path of Islam. Gave everything he had, but he didn't give bay'at. He didn't give bay'at. Victory is not defined by how many bodies you've buried and how many bodies they've buried. Victory is defined by resistance. The more you resist, the more victorious you are. They're killing the Gaza Strip, they're bombarding schools, they're attacking children. After all of that, the Palestinian nation is still strong, still standing. That's victory. They're amongst rubble. Their buildings are destroyed. Their children are yatim and orphans. Body count after body count coming out of the UN. And yet we call them victorious. There's actual celebrations in the streets of Gaza. Why? Resistance. Pick up history, guys. Read history a little bit. Find out what happened with our imams and our Ahlul Bayt. Amir al-Mu'mineen, of course, 23 years, like I said, was silent, quote unquote, although he wasn't silent. He would go knocking on the door with his wife and say, were you not in Ghadir? Were you not in Ghadir? Were you not in Ghadir? Yes, I was. But silent majority, right? Indifferent. During Imam Hussein's day of Ashura, they would say, look, don't worry about what's happening in northern Iraq. That's between two shahzadis. That's between Muawiyah's son and Ali's son. They have, you know, personal family problems, and they're fighting. No, this is not about haq and batil. It's not about injustice versus justice. It's something that's personal. Don't get involved in that. Because nowadays we require some tools, guys, that we don't have sometimes. One of them is called basirat, called insight. Right? We have two sets of eyes. We have the eyes of the body, the eyes of the soul. Our eyes and the body might be functioning, 20/20 vision, no doubt. But if the soul is blind, then Islam considers you to be blind as well. For you to not be able to see in the reality or the belly of the beast to see exactly what they're up to. That's not what a mu'min is all about. A mu'min is somebody who's able to see what the reality of the situation is. In Imam Ali's life, we look at the idea of his courage. Abu Sufyan comes to him and says, look, I can help you. He says, you want me to gain your help? You were the cause of all this. It's like when the US came to Iran for help to fight ISIS, people were shocked. They're like, wait a second, why would they deny the US? What does Iran want? I mean, you want them to be that blind to say, oh yes, US, you're coming to me to help me fight your own baby? Sure, no problem. Is a mu'min that blind? If Imam Ali said yes to Abu Sufyan, we'd be all in arms. Saying, Ali, do you not know who Abu Sufyan is? He's the judge of right now every problem that's happening right now all over the world. He's the reason why there is disarray in the Islamic Empire right now. He is the reason why Saqifah happened. And you want to go and gain his help? Mawla, with all due respect, a little bit of awareness. Not for a moment did he consider Abu Sufyan's help. How can we ask Iran to have help from the Abu Sufyan of today? It's not possible. Let's be careful. Let's understand a little bit of what's happening around the world. Imam Ali's courage across 23 years. And had he had the ashab, he would have risen up and fought for his God-given right. Pick up khutbah Sheikh Shakia, guys. Nahjul Balagha, khutbah number 3. You can read the pain of Amir al-Mu'mineen in that khutbah. The old have died off, the young became old. I'm still sitting here waiting for my God-given right. If I pull up my Zulfiqar, they say Ali is hungry for power. If I'm quiet, they say Ali is fearful of death. What do you do? Difficult situation. What does he do? He stays at home. He protects the deen of Islam. Had he pulled out Zulfiqar, Islam would have been nabuda as it was. Let me explain to you the situation, because a lot of us are confused, but why didn't Imam Ali come out? It's not my topic, but since I'm here, let's discuss it. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And let's use Imam Ali's own judgment during his own khilafah to understand his philosophy behind quote-unquote silence. The very famous judgment that two mothers come to Imam Ali with a baby claiming that this baby is theirs. And Imam Ali's famous judgment that, look, let's cut the baby in half. You have one half, you have the other. And when one of the mothers spoke up and said, well, no, it's okay. She's the mother. Give the child to her. And Imam Ali knew that she wasn't the mother. In fact, this was the mother that was claiming that she was the mother. Why? Because a true mother, a true guardian, a true protector would rather see the son or the child sahih and salim and healthy, albeit in someone else's hands, then cut into pieces. Imam Ali's silence wasn't his silence. It was him being the guardian and the protector of the deen, where albeit he'd rather see it in someone else's hand in one piece, than cut into pieces if the Zulfiqar came out. If that's courage, that is what's called shuja'at. To put your God-given right aside and look at what the deen wants. And fight your nafs and your desire for the sake of the deen. Why is it important today? Because if you look at history, again, history. Read books, guys. Read books. It's a dry subject. It's khushk, I know. But it will tell us a lot of things. If we ever have a chance, inshallah, we'll recite a whole ashra on the Kufans. The Ahl al-Kufa were very ajib individuals. When Imam Hussein made his intention to go and fight Yazid, the entire Muslim world was quiet. The only ones that wrote letters were the Ahl al-Kufa. No one asked you to write letters. Just stay quiet the way everyone else is quiet. No. They would have secret meetings in their homes, write letters upon thousands of letters that we are yatim mawla, we need your imamat mawla, we have nobody mawla, we don't accept Yazid. When it came time for them to actually back up their words, they were nowhere to be found. And then what is more ajib and more strange is that after when Imam Hussein was shaheed to avenge his shahadat, again the Kufans rose up. Wait a second, before and after we'll cut it. During the actual sacrifice, where were you? Why is that the case? Whole different nasha altogether. But that's what history brings you. And we need to develop these qualities to be the ashab of Imam al-Zamana, ajallahu ta'ala faraju sharif.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
Let me very briefly tell you a little bit about the importance of ashab. We have this misconception, or at least maybe I think that we do. And sometimes we see this misconception manifested in the second and third imam. We have Hassani and Husayni approaches, right? We have ulama who are Hassani and Husayni. Yeah, we believe Imam Hassan to be somebody who, na'udhu billah, was a little bit timid, didn't like confrontation, was somebody who perhaps didn't like to rock the boats. You know, the moment that things are going a little bit this way, let's put them back this way. He was the one that did sort of Ma'aviyah, right? Then we have someone like Husayn, who's ready for war, bloodshed. Let's get out there, let's fight. All I have is a handful, doesn't matter, let's go. One is Hassani, one is Husayni. One alim too is Hassani. One alim is Husayni. Rah, 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 out there, Al-Quds Day, speaking at the top of his lungs. Other alim doesn't say much. Yes, we should fight Zulu, absolutely. Hassani, Husayni. Even to the point where there are some ja'li ahadith, some ahadith that are made up, na'udhu billah. They talk about the fact that when Imam Hassan was born, the Prophet took a green cloth and put it around his forehead. Green means what? Peace, security, safety, no confrontation. Green is a nice color. When Imam Hussein was born, it was a red cloth around his head. Bloodshed, war, fight. Right? Sabzi and Surkhi, they would call it. That's the Imam that's Sabzi, that's green. This is the Imam that's Surkhi, that's red. And we believe that Imam Hassan did sulh with Ma'aviyah because that was his personality. And Imam Hussein rose up against Yazid because that was his personality. He's Sabzi, he's Surkhi. Sabzi in terms of the Farsi, not in terms of the Urdu. Sabz means green in Farsi. Sabzi in Urdu means something else. Or sometimes we believe that Imam Hassan did sulh with Muawiyah because Muawiyah was a little bit more smarter than his son was. My brothers and my sisters, please be very careful. We have levels in prophethood, no doubts. We have, and we say this with complete yaqeen, there were certain prophets that were higher than other prophets. We have the five ulul azm that we learned in Sunday school. The top is being our last prophet. There's no muqabila, there's no muqayasa, there's no debate between his rutbah in the eyes of Allah, his level, and let's say Nabi Adam. He's a prophet, we respect him, but he's not our holy prophet. These levels don't exist in imamat. Imamat is one nur across 12 bodies. There's no levels. Albeit we might treat other imams differently. Imam Ali's wilad, mashallah, is pat. Imam Jawad, there's a handful of us. That's us, not them. If you cut and paste the imams in history, wherever, they will do exactly what the imam before them did. If Imam Hassan was there in the day of Ashura, he would do exactly what Imam Hussein did. If Imam Hussein was there in Imam Hassan's time, he would do the exact same thing Imam Hassan did. What's the difference? It's not about Sabzi and Surkhi. It's not about Ma'vi and Yazid. Ma'vi and Yazid were one person. Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi salam were also one person. The difference, the only difference between the two were the Ashab. Were the Ashab. Ashab Hassani were one, Ashab Husayni were another. Ashab Husayni were those individuals, Shabi Ashur, very famously, in the darkest portion of the night. Candle is blown out, it's complete pitch black. Imam Hussein is begging them to leave. Please, they want my head on a spear, go. You have family. You have things to look after. Go. Relights the candle. Not one person moves. The night before, they know that they're going to be killed in such a way where not only will they be killed, they'll be embarrassed. Their heads taken off their bodies. Their clothes ripped off their back. Their bodies trampled by horses. They knew all of this. It's not like they were told, oh, tomorrow you'll be victorious. It's not like they were told, oh, you know, you'll have a, you know, some gold or some payment. They were given Jannah on Shabi Ashur. Imam Hussein said, look, if you're worried about heaven, it's yours. Guarantee it's yours. You've come this way. You've given me your heart. That's all I need. But the Ashab of Imam Hussein were those individuals who wanted to back up what they were saying. And they would say very famously that if you killed our body and chopped it into pieces, trampled it, gave it life again, then killed it, then gave it life again, then killed it 1,000 times. Labbaik ya Hussein. The Ashab of Hassan, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, were not like that. In the middle of the day, in the middle of the Maidan of the war, they left him. In the brightest moment of the day, right in the middle of the Maidan of the Jung, they left. They left. Every Imam's success when it comes to their Qiyam or their acceptance of no Qiyam has to do with one factor, their Ashab. Those around them. How many times have you heard the Imam say, if I had this many, I would do this. If I had that many, I would do this. He actually tests them and say, look, if you want to follow me, do this. No one will do it. The Imam of our time is no different. If there is one comparison between the Ashab of Imam Hussein, that's the Ashab of our Imam. And one trait that we need is courage. It's courage. One trait that we need is shuja'at. It's the one thing that Imam Sajjad mentioned in his khutbah, that this is who we are and what we're known as. One of them is that we are courageous individuals. At that moment, if Islam is asking us to do this, we will do this. And that's what we need today. Because the reality is that we have two deens right now. One deen exists in our head, and one deen exists in our books. And the deen that exists in our head is what's governing us right now. And the deen from the books, we're getting further and further away from. A lot of I believes, a lot of it was up to me, a lot of I think Islam is like this. Doesn't matter what you think, with all due respect. Everyone's a mujtahid, everyone does ijtihad nowadays. Everyone pulls out their own meaning from this hadith and that ayat. Should go on these forums online. MashaAllah, these are full of maraji and mujtahids. They question the fatwas of the marjas. They say, oh, this man lives in a cave in the east, what does he know? I'm in LA. Does he even know what my pain is? That's your dini khayali, they call it. Inside of your head is your deen. The deen of the book says something else. When we hear about riwayat, they say that when the Imam our time will come, he will implement a brand new deen to us. We're like, wait a second. Is there going to be tahrif, distortion of the deen? Oh my God, what's going to happen? No, it's not. He'll present to you the deen of the books. And it won't match with the deen of your mind. It'll be brand new to us. Let's try to bridge the gap between what the actual deen is and what the deen of our mind is. Or bridge the gap between what Imam Khomeini called Dini Amrikai and Dini Nab Muhammadi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
So our discussion in the next 4 nights is developing Islamic courage, shuja'at, to be courageous individuals. In the name of that Imam who stood there in the courtyard of Yazid, shackled. You know that when Yazid, of course, was on his, they call it Tahte Chubi, they called it this thing that he called a member, but we wouldn't call it a member. And he was giving his address, and the head of Aba Abdullah was brought to him. He would address the head and say, Aba Abdullah, very sarcastically, I never thought that you would end up like this, in front of me, lying here, lifeless. And when he was done, Imam Sajjad would ask him to speak, and he would initially say no to Imam Sajjad, because he realized the power of the Ahlul Bayt. Until the people of his own camp said, look at this man, he's broken, he's shackled, he's a prisoner. He's been sick for the past 2 weeks. He's broken. Let him speak. What's the most he'll do? And I ask you guys, inshallah, we'll cover that in the next 4 nights. Ask you to please, even on YouTube, they make videos about his sermon. He introduces who the Ahlul Bayt are. He says, I am the son of this and this and this. Read that khutbah. It's amazing. How a man sits there in the belly of the beast, looks at the enemy in the eye and says, this is who we are. That takes courage. That's what the deen requires at that moment. Not to run from the Maidan, to stay there, look the enemy in the eye and say, this is what's going to happen. Now, 9/11 for many of us was a big test. It was a huge test for many, many of us. Many of our organizations, many of our masajid, many of us as well. I don't know about here in LA, but in the northeastern part of the country and in southern Canada, we saw a lot of people do a 180. Their physical face changed, the hijab came out, the names changed, the beard was shaved. We saw masajid organizations that you would come and you would see all sorts of, you know, stuff on the wall. Imam Khomeini's picture, for example, Al-Quds rallies, for example. I remember I walked into one center and these guys were hardcore. I mean, hardcore. The yellow flags everywhere and all sorts of material everywhere. I was like, wow, you guys are hardcore. 9/11 happened. A few years later, I went back to the center and there were bare walls. I couldn't tell if I was in the office here or in the masjid. And the test will get harder. Because the reality is that right now what's happening is that the enemies here in the West are testing us with something else. Over there it's bloodshed, fear of life. Over here it's something else. It's fear of identity. They say boo to us and we go running into our corners. Just they say boo to us. Or they call and say, we want to come and see what you do. Come see what us do. Come meet with us, sit down, talk to us, no problem. I'm not ripping off these signs off the walls though. This is who we are. You want to come? This is how you come. We have organizations who they said boo to them. Just boo, like a ghost. And they would change their entire Sunday school curriculum. Take out history because it didn't fit the boogeyman. Change actual history. History that is, you know, quite historic, very important to understand. Teach our kids about this, but no. Because the boo man doesn't like it, take it out. Rip it out. They just said boo. No one is threatening your life. No one is putting you in prison. Nothing. One phone call, one visit, one random guy walking to our hall, and now we're all uptight. Calm down, let's relax. Because 9/11 was one test. There's other tests coming as well. And if we don't have this Islamic courage, it's not going to work. So across 4 nights, we will dissect this topic one by one. How to develop courage. What are those blockages for courage? Now our youth, you'll ask me, how's it relevant to me? Great question. It's relevant to you because sometimes you are at a crossroads more than anybody else is. And I want my parents to understand this. If you are a parent of a child who is teenagers or even elementary school or university or college, you have to understand the sheer difficulty in maintaining the basic principles of the deen in this day and age. When things are norm nowadays that go against the deen of Islam, your child has to make two very important choices. Either become abnormal and have this idea of possibly being bullied or isolated or ostracized or all these things, or accept the norms and sacrifice a little bit of the deen. The sheer difficulty to maintain their faith in this disgusting society is getting worse and more difficult day in and day out. With social media, with the internet, with the himmat of the youth today, all these things are there. And I ask you, it's off a little bit off topic. I ask you that if you are somebody who's looking to befriend your child, work with them on this. If you lose a few battles to win the war, then so be it. But understand how difficult it is for an 18-year-old sister, a 21-year-old sister, a 15-year-old sister to walk the path of Iman when she's being constantly bombarded by shaitan every step of the way. After a while, you get tired. After a while, you get hit. After a while, you stumble, you trip, you fall. And sometimes our parents, our elders, us from the member, we kick them while they're down. I told you. Wait a second. Pull them up. Dust them off. Are you okay? I have your back. Now tell them I told you so. Then tell them, look, I told you, be careful of this crack in the sidewalk. Courage requires us to look at what the deen wants and what I want. If it matches, fantastic. If it doesn't match, I'm sorry. Sacrifice yourself. The deen comes first. We have a hadith that says, لَمُوتُ قَبْلًا تَمُوتُ. Die before you die. Meaning what? Die before you die. So talk, the whole discussion in Irfan. Die before you die. Meaning what? Kill your own natural desires inside of you before you leave this world. And point your desires towards the deen. Because the deen, like I said before, is not a buffet table. You enter a buffet table and you look, okay, this is good, that's horrible, ew, that's good, that's yummy. And you keep filling your plate up with those kind of foods. Islam says, no, look, either the whole table or nothing else. Either you're in or you're not in. Right? A child will get up and go in this room and out this room, in this room and out this room. Someone will grab and say, look, beta, either you're in the majlis or you're out of the majlis. The deen also says, look, you can't be in and out. Either you're in the deen or you're out of the deen. Once you're in the deen, once you say, la ilaha illallah, that's it, you're in the deen. Lover, you say, oh, malana ikn lakra hafid deen. It's the one ayat they have memorized. There's no compulsion in religion. That means do whatever you want. No one can say anything. No, it's ghalat, it's wrong. There's compulsion in religion. Absolutely there's compulsion in religion. You have to do this. Once you enter the realm of la ilaha illallah, your compulsion begins. Don't spit ayats at me and say, oh, this is the justification of my lifestyle. No, it's not. It's wrong. Courage in this day and age, in this age that you guys are at, is what, like I said, to examine your life. Am I taking the deen as a buffet table or am I completely into the deen? If the deen says don't do this, I won't do it. Doesn't matter if the outcome is me being ostracized or bullied, etc., etc. So be it, take it. That's your courage. Because that's what the Imam of our time needs. Those kind of ashab to do this, inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. The days of Imam Sajjad are upon us. But when you hear about Imam Sajjad, right away the name that comes up is Bibi Zainab. Imam Hussein and Bibi Zainab were a unique pair. These were a brother and a sister that would complete each other. Every tragedy, every problem, every incident that occurred, if they had nobody, they had each other. When the Prophet left, they had each other. When they saw the door of their mother forced her to be unconscious, they had each other. When they saw the sword of Ibn Muljim on the head of their father, they were together. When they saw the slow destruction of their brother Hassan, they were together. That's why one of the most difficult scenes that we have on the day of Ashura is this conversation that Bibi Zainab and Imam Hussein had. So Imam Hussein, and this is something that is just in my mind, I have not read it anywhere. Fighting an enemy, giving your life, taking an arrow, it almost seems like that's easy. Sitting there and telling Zainab that I'm leaving was very difficult for Imam Hussein. They say he went through 5 to 6 different khudafasis on the day of Ashura. When he was able to finally break free from the khaymah and the women were screaming and crying, it was then that Bibi Zainab says, "Mahlan, mahlan, yabna Zahra." Slow down, oh son of Zahra. And this very infamous discussion happened between the two. But Bibi Zainab tells it, Imam Hussein, that our mother gave me an amanat to give to you. This was Imam Hussein and Bibi Fatima, that of course were also a unique pair. And Bibi Zainab wanted to make Imam Hussein very clear that you're going towards the Maidan of Karbala, but don't think that our mother isn't with you. She's with you. When Bibi Fatima Zahra comes to Asma bint Umais and says, "Asma, I'm going to my room. So long as you hear the dhikr of Allah, know that I'm still in this world. The moment that you hear the dhikr of Allah stop, know that I've left this world." Asma stands there, she hears Allahu Akbar, she hears askar, dhikr upon dhikr. There comes a time that dhikr stops. And Asma calls out, "Ya binti Muhammad, O daughter of Muhammad," there's no response. "Ya binti Muhammad," there's no response. Asma goes running into the room and sees lifeless lying there. It's Fatima Zahra. She comes, she kisses Fatima on the forehead. She says, "Send my salams to your father." When Asma went outside the house, opened the door, the first two people that she saw was a very young Imam Hassan and a very young Imam Hussein. They looked up at Asma and they realized something was wrong. Imam Hassan says to Asma, "Aina umna?" Where is our mother? Where is our mother? Asma puts her head down and enters the room. They come following. Imam Hassan enters the room where he sees his mother lying there without any life. He collapses on the body of his mother. But Imam Hussein's reaction was somewhat different. He stands away from his mother. He simply says, "Amma, ana Hussein, amma. Amma, ana Hussein. This is Hussein, amma. Never have I called you and you haven't responded." This mother and a son were very close, and Bibi Zainab realized on the day of Ashura, this would be incomplete if I didn't deliver you Amma's amanat. She turned towards Medina, almost as if to say, "Amma, I want you to bear witness that I'm giving your amanat to your Hussein." She leans forward, she kisses the chest of Aba Abdullah, she kisses the neck of Aba Abdullah, she kisses the forehead of Aba Abdullah. She says, "Bhaiya, our mother said that when my Hussein will enter the Maidan of Karbala, let him know that his mother is with him. Kiss that forehead, that when no one had arrows, when no one had spears, they will throw rocks at my son. Kiss that, kiss that neck where Shimr ibn Zuljoshin 13 times with a dull knife would separate the head from the body of my son. And kiss that chest where Umar bin Saad would say, I need 10 volunteers, 10 horses to go and change their hooves and trample the body of Hussein to the point where Sheikh Abbas Qummi narrates in Nafasul Mahmoom, the last mal'oon to trample the body of Hussein says, by Allah, I heard Hussein's ribs break when my horses trampled his body. This was Zainab, this was Hussein. The same Zainab that would take the bloodied kurta of Imam Hussein, and hold on to it from Karbala to Kufa, Kufa to Sham, back to Karbala, back to Medina. And the first place she would go to is the Holy Prophet's grave and say, nah, nah. She wouldn't complain about her own zakhmi, her own bazu, her ropes around her arms. She would say nothing. She would simply present him with that bloody kurta and say, nah, nah, look at what your ummah did with your Hussein. This was Zainab, this was Hussein. Bibi Zainab, your Ashura has begun. Bibi Zainab, your Ashura has begun. Your journey has begun. How difficult is it to take this amount of children and these amount of women from Karbala to Kufa, Kufa to Sham? It was Imam Sajjad himself who said, of everything that I've seen from the moment that we entered Karbala to when we returned back to Medina, if it's one thing that was the most difficult thing for me, it was Sham, Sham, Sham. When someone asked Mawla, it's in your blood. Shahadat is your virasat, it's your inheritance. Your forefathers were shaheed. Your children were shaheed. This is a moment of celebration. He says, yes, you're absolutely right. Shahadat is our virasat. But bringing our women without even a hijab or a parda into the bazaar of Sham, where the Shamis will throw rocks at them and swear at them, where the darbar of Yazid will open, and 700 men will be sitting there waiting for this tamasha to begin. This is not part of our virasat. This was the most difficult part for Imam Sajjad. Bibi Zainab, our salams to you. You took Imam Hussein's mission and you completed it, but didn't come without sacrifice. When Ulama Muhammad come to Imam Hussein and say, Mamu, give us ijazat for war, he says that I cannot give you permission until your mother gives you permission. And they would say, it was Amma herself that sent us to you. How many mothers do you know would prepare their young children for battle? But the idea was to drown yourself in Hussein the way Hussein has drowned himself in Islam. She would put the armor on. She put the shoes on. She'd give him the sword. And she would tell both of her Ona Muhammad that, look, I will watch from the Khaymah to see which one of you is more brave. If you get to Furat, don't drink a drop of water. Think about Sakina's thirst. Think about Ali Asghar's thirst. And put the water down. This was the same Zainab. When Ona Muhammad were brought back to the Khaymah, everybody waited to see what Zainab would do. The Khaymah opened. Zainab comes out. Lying in front of her is a 10-year-old Ona and a 12-year-old Muhammad. She would kneel down in front of them. She put one hand on the chest of Aun. She would put one hand on the chest of Muhammad. She would fall to sajda and say, Ya Allah, accept this qaleel sacrifice on my behalf. سَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ We ask you Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to accept this qaleel ibadat inshaAllah. We ask you Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in this time of fitna and fasad and corruption and injustice, we ask you Allah help us develop our internal Islamic courage inshaAllah to fight this fasad right now. We ask you Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to weaken the hands of the enemies of Islam, strengthen the mustaz'afin all over the world, and ya Allah there's so much injustice, so much tyranny, so much oppression all over the world. Our Hussein right now is in Ghaybat. We ask you, Allah, to please hasten that reappearance. Allow us to be his ashab when he comes, inshaAllah.